scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla, the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, here we go. Let's get it going this hour. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, December 11th. And we're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. What's up, Vic?
Wasn't on my radar that it was Wednesday until you just said that. Now I'm really excited.
It's the only way that I know what day it is by coming
saying
on,
it out loud?
Saying it out loud and reading what's on the bottom right of my computer. That's how I know what day it is most days. So I'm happy to have been able to inform others what day it is as well. Busy hour ahead on Flames Talk, Daily Flames Roundtable. But I want to start by talking about maybe one of the most talked about guys on this team over the last two plus years, and that would be Jonathan Huberdeau. And many of our Jonathan Huberdeau conversations have been negative over the last number of years. But right now, there at the very least is some reason to talk positively about what we're seeing from number 10. And when you give a guy a hard time for as long as Huberdeau has been given a hard time in this market, I do think it's fair to also underline when things are going well, which they are right now. Scored the game-winning goal on Tuesday night. Scores Calgary's fourth goal on Tuesday night, which I think is cause for celebration. Flames had gone 25 games in a row without scoring four goals. And he gets 2 points to help the Flames snap their road losing streak at 8 games. And you know, all the things that happened on Tuesday night, all the streaks that we were talking about all ended. And Jonathan Huberdeau was kind of the author of both of them. He gives them their fourth goal on the power play. And that fourth goal is the game winner as they snap the road losing streak. Okay, good. It's a 5-game point streak now for Huberdeau. Also good. 7 points in those 5 games. And a lot of people talking about how he's really changed his approach to the game, or really changed his game, changed the way he's playing. I've heard the term transformed his game. So, Mr. Vickers, as we get this hour going, text lines open at 960-960. What's happening here with number 10? Is this truly, has he transformed his game? Has he made such significant alterations to his game that that's why we're seeing him more effective and more productive? Have the Flames changed the way they're using him? Is he just having a decent run of points right now? Is it the always get out of jail free somewhere in between? Like, what are we watching right now with Jonathan Huberdeau?
I mean, this is what the kids call giving him his flowers right now. Is that correct? Do I have
that terminology? I believe
that's the terminology?
Right way of saying it, yep.
So for me, yes, you have to give him credit for as much as we've talked about his lack of production, his lack of being visible out there in key times for the Calgary Flames. When he does put together a run like he's on now, a 5-game point streak, you do have to tip your cap to him. And is this the new and improved Jonathan Huberdeau? Maybe. I'm going to hesitate. I'm going to pump the brakes a little from my perspective. I will be the Debbie Downer in this conversation because I have seen him in red, yellow, and white go on 5-game point streaks before and then have it not amount to a turnaround. It didn't amount to anything but a brief wave of momentum. He had a 5-game point streak near the end of last season. That run included 8 points with 2 goals and 6 assists in 8 games overall. During that extended run, he started the season with 6 points or 5 points in 3 games, where it's okay, fresh start. We've gotten through the shock of year one. We've gotten through the slump of year two. Maybe the beginning of year three is where it turns around. And then he followed that up with 2 points in his next 10 games. So for me, I do need to see more of a prolonged stretch. I don't know what that number is. I don't know what that's going to have to represent to me. From my perspective, and I think from everyone's perspective, he's had more droughts than downpours, but I need to see a bit more of a lengthy run before I'll declare this a new Jonathan Huberdeau or go out and say, okay, this production is going to be something that's staying and sustainable over the long term. But again, to go back to the beginning, you do have to give him credit because if he's able to take this stretch and prolong it even further, it'll be some of the best hockey he's played with the Flames.
Well, and I mean, that there's no doubt. I agree completely. And look, I'm not ready to sit here and declare anything either, because he got off to a good start this season too, remember? And then that tailed off. There was a span there of, I don't know, 20 games where there was a lot of frustration. I know there was a lot of frustration from Flames fans. There's a lot of frustration from Flames observers. And I think even some frustration from him, because he got off to that good start. And then all of a sudden the points weren't coming the same way. And then Mantha gets hurt and the guy they brought in to play with him is done for the season. And then they're line juggling and trying to find different lines. And now they, for the time being, seem like they found something with Kadri and Pospisil on Jonathan's line. I will say this. We have seen recently some things from Huberdeau that we haven't seen on a regular basis prior to the last little while here. Like this whole idea of him, like, at what point did we ever expect Jonathan Huberdeau to have more goals than assists? At what point did we ever, which is the case right now, 10 and 9. At what point did we ever expect Huberdeau lead the team in points? Sure, that's been the expectation all along. But lead the team in goals? Don't know if that's been the expectation. And he does that as well with 10 goals. And I'm not trying to sit here and celebrate and say that, you know, the Huberdeau conundrum has been solved, because I don't think that's the case. But I do think we've seen some things that are different. This whole idea of him going to the front of the net and being a guy that kind of relishes that role and excels in that role, that's not something we saw from him in his first two seasons. And I think that there's kind of a combination of, there's a guy who I think has changed his approach a little bit and has said, hey, I'm willing to do that a little bit more. But I also think there's been a change in utilization from the coaching staff, especially on the power play, where he scored a lot of those close-in goals like he did for the game winner against Nashville on Tuesday. Like, a good chunk of Jonathan's 10 goals this year have been scored like he's pretending he's Sean Monahan. Like, he's right there in the crease area or the very low slot area, and he's picking up garbage and putting it in. Like, and that's not a bad thing at all. That's exactly how he scored that goal against the Preds. So I do think there's been some change in his game, and I do think there's been change in his approach. I also think there's been change in the way the Flames are using him, and I think that's just because this whole thing has been a process, and far too often it has been a frustrating process. So, yes, we need to see it for much longer than 5 games, and really it's only been 4 games in a period, because he scored 2 of those points in garbage time against Pittsburgh on that game, it was only in the third period where Huberdeau and Kadri got put on a line together and have been together on a line at 5-on-5 for the last 4 games afterwards. So, yeah, I guess I've seen some changes. I'm optimistic at what we're seeing. It's nice to see Huberdeau producing right now. But, again, we have seen different stretches over the past 2+ years where we thought maybe this was going to be ultimately sustainable, and it hasn't been. So let's continue to see if it can be sustainable.
The most encouraging thing for me, and you mentioned it, is his play at the net front. And in the past, in his tenure with the Flames, it felt like almost anything that he generated or tried to generate in the past has been on the wing, off the rush. And this year he's spending a lot more time at the net front. First things first, where do you go if you want to score goals? You go to the net. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. You go to NHL Edge. All the leading scorers are in that low slot net front area in terms of where they produce the majority of their goals. And Jonathan Huberdeau, of his 48 shots this season, 19 have come from that location. Not surprisingly, 7 of his 10 goals have come in that area. Another one in the actual crease itself. So 8 of his 10, 80% of his goals have been scored within 20-ish feet of the net.
Yeah.
And what makes him, from my perspective, so dangerous in that area is his hands, his processing, and his general quickness allow him a lot of times to be first on second chance opportunities. We know along the boards and in battles, Huberdeau excels. He's able to box out. He's able to protect the puck. In this situation, he doesn't necessarily have the puck in advance, but when a rebound, for example, or a shot gets blocked but doesn't get completely halted and still finds a way through but not get to the net, he's able to fish that puck out of feet of the defenders or out of his own feet and give himself an opportunity to score. That general playing at the net more is certainly evident, and it's encouraging. I mentioned 19 of his 48 shots have come from there. Last year, only 41 of his 143 shots came in that area. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, I don't know if it's a more concerted effort. I don't know if it's a feel thing. Like, I'm not, is he being coached to go there? Is he just realizing he's having success there? So once you find a little bit of success in one area, you just try to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. But to me, the primary reason has been that realization that, you know what, instead of trying to generate from 70 feet off the wing, off the rush, and trying to find a trailer or trying to find a guy driving through two bodies, what if I'm the guy that just goes to the net and either with the puck or looking for second chance opportunities? And to your point, he leads the team in goals. That wasn't on the bingo card 2 months ago.
And over the last four games, I'll take out the third period against Pittsburgh. So the last four games, Huberdeau has been on the ice at 5-on-5 for 80 shot attempts, 4-56 against. He's been out there for 15 high danger chances, 4-12 against. And this is the interesting thing. Look how Ryan Huska is using Huberdeau right now. Very similar to Kadri, as they've been on the same line, genius. But look how Huberdeau's been used. 41 offensive faceoffs in the last four games, 9 defensive zone faceoffs. And that's not a criticism. That's
how you use your high offensive players.
That's what you're supposed to do, especially for a guy that has not been generating offensively the way that the team has wanted. So they're using him in a very offensively slanted role. And I think that if you're the Flames, you're happy with what you've seen so far. Now, the question or the challenge now for Huberdeau is to keep that going.
Right.
And the challenge is for him to still remain effective. Like, it's been 5 games or 4 games in a period. Keep it going. Don't stop doing what we've seen him do. He's also 10 shot attempts in his last 4 games. He's had 5 high danger chances. So 5 of his 10 shot attempts have been high dangers at all strength. We're definitely seeing some positive there, and now we just want to see it continue.
Here's where I'm slightly concerned, but maybe not concerned whatsoever. And hear me out, because how I'm prefacing this makes absolutely zero sense. But let me ask you this. Does his shooting percentage concern you in any way? He's shooting at 20.8%, which puts him in the top 10 of the league. I think he's 38th overall amongst players that have had 10 or more games this season. So that's due for a natural regression. Not too many people that aren't pure goal scorers shoot at 20%. But at the same time, a lot more of his shots are coming from the areas on the ice where you have a higher shooting percentage. So he's working himself or is in better positions to shoot, to have that high shooting percentage. But at the same time, 1 in every 5 seems like it's due for a regression.
Now, I will say Huberdeau has always been an above average shooter. His career shooting percentage is 12.4, which is higher than the average. So I don't think it's going to come back all the way crashing down to NHL average, but yes, that's still high even for him, for sure. Here's the question that I think is, and then we'll get to the text line here shortly, but a couple of, I think, important questions. First of all, now that Jonathan's been here for 2+ seasons, like, what is a measure of success? What is going to determine whether or not, because the contract, we can't ever fully forget about the contract.
It
exists.
It's the highest in franchise history.
So what now, knowing that we're probably never going to see him back at 115 points, what now is a measure of success for Huberdeau? What now determines whether or not we say he's being a useful player or an important player compared to what the narrative has been for a good chunk of the last 2 seasons?
For me, I'm not, again, triple digits is out of the question. We're not even starting the conversation with that. That's just unfair to the player. It's unfair to the system, because I don't think there are too many players in general in the system the Calgary Flames deploy that are going to be in that triple digit range. I'll even walk back so far down as to point per game wouldn't necessarily, like, if he could get there, that'd be fantastic, but that's not where I'm setting the bar. You're not having to hurdle that. To me, if he can be somewhere in that 65 point range over an 82 game schedule, whether that's 25 goals, whether it's 30 goals, whether it's 50 assists, however he gets there, if he can consistently be one of their top 2 point producers and he's able to fall into that 65-ish point range, I would consider that a win. Now, having said that, even with the season he's had this year, and he's still somewhere around projected to be somewhere around 28 goals this season.
52 points and I think around 27, 28 goals.
Yeah. For now, I would take that. But if he's able to build something with these revisions, with these adjustments he's made in his game, if he can get me somewhere in that 60, mid-60s range, I'm considering that a win at this point. I'm parking the contract that was signed a couple of years ago.
I can't park the contract. Like, it's always going to be there for me. Like, the $10.5 million is always going to be attached to him.
But then shouldn't that mean the expectation has got to be at least a point per game with that?
Yeah, probably. But I guess when I say that, I'm like, okay, I have to balance it out with, I know the contract exists, but realistically, even knowing the contract's there, what can we actually see from him? And so do I think he gets back to an 80-point player? The way the Flames are built right now and the way they're playing, probably not. But at the very least, if you could see him be a more effective player, plus being a slightly more productive player than he has been the last couple of seasons, like if he can finish higher than he was 2 years ago, if he can be in the 60-point range, at the very least, I think you can say, even with the contract, because you're right, there is a portion of it that's like, it's signed, you can't do anything about it.
It's an off-ice element. It's not an on-ice element. I park the two personally. I can understand where you go, well, it's still the biggest contract in franchise history. He's still making eight digits, and with eight digits has to be more. I just don't think it's fair to expect a correlation between what he's getting paid and what he's producing.
I mean, I don't think it's unfair either.
I'm not sitting here saying, how dare you consider his contract.
He also signed the contract. And everybody in the world everybody would. But when you sign that contract, it does come with it inherent expectations, right? And so,
yeah.
And is it ever going to live up to the $10.5 million? Probably not. But if he can be a impactful guy who can be more productive than he's been the last two seasons, at the very least, I think you can start to say maybe he can be a more useful guy or a more effective guy on this team.
More impactful.
And judging on kind of or evaluating on a kind of sloped scale, that would be somewhat of a success this year. So I do like the way things are trending. Now, here's the more important question, less about Pat and Aaron. What is it going to take for a lot of people on the outside? What is it going to take for a lot of fans who have seemingly made up their mind on this guy? And that's fair. That's fine. But like, what is he going to have to do to start changing minds on his tenure in Calgary? Because if you're a fan, you're never going to forget the contract, but you also understand that, okay, he's probably not ever going to live up to the contract, at least in terms of points. So what starts to change the narrative on Huberdeau? This is not a perfect comparison, but I remember Stajan. Stajan was,
fair, yeah.
Like, he was absolutely, not loathed, because he was such a nice guy, but, like, on the ice, he was a whipping boy for his first, like, two-plus seasons. He signed that contract so quickly after being acquired by the Flames, and so it brought with it expectations, and he really struggled under Brent Sutter. And then it started to turn after Brent left and Bob Hartley came on. And for whatever reason, that seemed to work with the way Stajan was playing. And so he was able to change the narrative on himself a little bit. So how does Huberdeau start to do that? What happens? What has to happen there? Neither of us know the answer definitively, but let's take a stab at it. What has to happen for the kind of public narrative on Huberdeau to start to shift a little more positive or skew a little more positive?
Well, much like Stajan, and I don't think we haven't necessarily seen this, and I think it's something that'll come with time, but you have to be that dependable veteran. You have to be that dependable leader, but you really, really, really need to make sure that you're doing everything you can within your power to usher in that next generation of Flames. Because again, 10.5 is too much to live up to based on the production that you're going to get. So any intangible you can think of, being the guy post game to answer the bell when things aren't going right, protecting your rookies, teaching them the ins and outs of the NHL, being that leader on and off the ice, that's where you can maybe start to recoup some of the, and I'm not saying that he's not doing this already. A lot of this stuff is stuff we'll never see, we'll never know. But one of the things I always appreciated in Matt Stajan was He was always there to answer for anything that happened, whether it involved him or not, and protected the young players in that room from having to do that role before they were ready, before they were mature enough to handle that role. Very much be the insulator of the team, be the leader, be that guy where, again, doesn't matter what necessarily the on-ice product is, as much as you can insulate that next generation of Flames player in the rebuild, in the retool that you're in, to me, that's first and foremost.
I think what it's going to take is more play like what we've seen recently.
Right.
Less of the frustrating passes to no one, or less of the frustrating turnovers. I don't, we're never going to be talking about a guy who's taken a ton of shots. That's just not who Jonathan is. But maybe, especially as we learn more and more about the personnel that is along with Jonathan on this team, you know, maybe when you had some more skill on the power play in Florida, maybe some of those low percentage passes were, that there was a higher chance of them being converted with Jonathan's pinpoint accuracy, but you also need the right guy receiving passes and putting themselves in proper spots. Maybe that's just not the way this Flames team is built right now. So less of those low percentage passes, less of those passes that far too often over the last 2 years have resulted in turnovers, which I think we have seen less of here over the last little bit.
Agree.
Those being a little bit more simple offensively while still utilizing his high level of skill, all those types of things. Like if we see that, plus a slight uptick in production, plus some more of the hard work that we've seen pay off. Like, I do think that starts to turn a narrative. And one thing that I think will keep him or will also help in that is something that he has done the entire way and kind of just what you talked about. At no point since he's got here has Jonathan really shied away from answering the bell or answering questions about his disappointing results.
Or even making excuses. Like,
yeah, he's done a very good job of being accountable publicly.
Right.
And he also behind the scenes has done, you know, all he can, I think, to try to change the way things have gone. And while it hasn't been 100% successful,
he
by
hasn't
no means
pouted, he hasn't sulked, he hasn't done any of that, which I tip my cap to.
Let's read some text, 960-960. I do think Huberdeau has played much better here over the last couple of weeks, and that's a real positive. Now keep it going. Matt in Calgary. Huberdeau's been more humble the last several games. He's playing a more simple game, willing to go to the net on the power play, shooting more instead of making insane passes to no one. This is sustainable. This reads, at this point, it'd be nice if Huberdeau could just break 60 points. Start with that. This reads from Hacksaw. Boys, regardless of point totals, Huberdeau has to be the Flames' best player. End of story. And I do think we've seen him be one of Calgary's best players here over the last little bit. It's not just the points. Like he's been pretty, I read you those numbers. He's been pretty impactful in terms of his on-ice time. And you know, I still think defensively there have been some miscues, but there's been some defensive miscues with Kadri and some other guys too. So if you're seeing those guys in the role they're being used impact things more offensively, positively than negatively defensively, I think you're okay with that. And yeah, I think you're okay with that with Huberdeau. This reads, if 65 points is acceptable for a $10.5 million player, you better hope other GMs aren't listening because that's a pretty low bar. That comes from Colin. I don't think anybody is suggesting that, but I do think what we're saying is, okay, Conroy didn't sign the contract. That was the prior GM. That was Brad Treliving. Huberdeau's here. He's not going anywhere. So you still have to make the best of it, even though that contract exists. Is more. I don't think anybody's sitting here saying that, oh, this is okay, they should have signed that contract. That's not what we're saying at all.
No, and for me, I honestly parked the contract because he's not going to live up to a $10.5 million contract on production alone. Like, it's just, we're not going to see triple digits out of Jonathan Huberdeau. We're not going to see 90 points out of Jonathan Huberdeau. So you've got to adjust for realistic expectations that you could get out of Huberdeau, because he's not going to be delivering that insane production.
This from Kyle. I think Husk has unlocked Huberdeau. I think we owe the turnaround to the coaching staff as much as Huberdeau. You know how much I dislike him as a player, but you can see his confidence increase in his play. He's checking, digging in the corners, and making an effort we've not seen from him since signing. That's all I've wanted from him. He's becoming an effective player when he doesn't have the puck. This reads from Andrew. He's got to get at least 60 points. Albert in Coronation says, if Huberdeau's a 65-point player and a plus 15 to 20, I'd be okay with the contract. This is, what does it say? Expectations of $175,000 per point. Unfair to expect more from the player unless he gives money back. Then fans shouldn't be expected to change the narrative. And that's fair. I'm not saying you have to. I just am asking the question openly. Dale and Drumheller, who cares about the Huberdeau contract? The Flames are barely at the cap floor. Let's talk about his contract when it starts to actually affect the team. And who knows, maybe spending to the cap next time brings along a player or reveals a player who gets his point totals up. This from Neil. At this point, Huberdeau's never going to be a point-per-game player. If he gets back to 60 points in a season at a zero or better plus-minus, I think that's the best you could hope for. Interesting as well to see Kadri as the 10th from worst plus-minus player in the league. That's not good. This says Huberdeau should restructure his contract. Not possible. This from Spencer in Saskatoon. I just have to kind of fully ignore what the contract is for Huberdeau. It and Naz's contract and the conditional first this year are the three worst things Tree left the Flames organization with. Now, that being said, I've generally liked his play this year, and especially the last few games. Finally, him and Naz with some chemistry is very exciting to see. If he can get on a bit of a heater for the second half of the year, I'd love to see it, not just as a Flames fan, but for Huberdeau himself. This from Brent in Langdon. Huberdeau needs to drive to the net and not slow up when he crosses the blue line looking for a pass. Once we see that, they can look at trading him. I do think,
yeah,
the trading stuff out, notwithstanding, I do think we've seen a little bit more of that as opposed to the enter the blue line,
hook,
curl back, right?
Yeah, he's playing a lot more north south from just the eye test. And again, I think it's led to a lot of the success. It's allowed him to get to the net front quicker. Again, he's not doing that button hook and trying to sauce it through three bodies to get to the other side of the ice. It's a lot more direct, sort of straight line approach that we've seen out of Huberdeau.
This text, not sure which game you guys are watching, but if you think he's one of our top players on a day-to-day basis, someone better help you understand the game. Watch that guy on a shift-in, shift-out basis, and he's useless. Getting a couple of points that happen to pop to you in front of the net doesn't make him a good player. And to which I responded, you're right, we don't watch the games. I haven't. When is the last time you watched a Flames game?
I just look at box scores.
I don't even do that.
Oh.
I just get Shan to write down some points and read those. And I'm not sure Shan watches the game.
I wasn't sure Shan could read or write.
Okay, that's a little awesome.
As he's sitting here doing diligent work for me to my left, I'm throwing him right under the bus.
There's just a few of the texts at 960-960. And you know what? I do think in the last four games, he's been one of their better players. In fact, I would go toe-to-toe. Having watched the games, I do indeed watch them. In fact, sometimes I watch them twice. Sometimes I will watch periods three and four times or portions of periods just because there are things I want to see again. I do think he's been one of their best players over the last three or four games.
What I do is I go and watch goals again so I can assign blame.
Oh, you're that guy.
I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This reads, I agree with the texter that suggested coaching has made a big difference for Huberdeau. Sutter shattered Huberdeau's confidence by making him place his up by making him play his off wing and talking about his restroom habits. That also I remember that.
Chef's kiss for that text.
He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Just quickly wanted to touch on this. Before we get the round table, I know there was somewhat of an online reaction on Wednesday morning when the Flames announced they were sending Walker Duehr and Jacob Pelche to the American League. I just would like to say, nothing to see here. We're not talking about the Flames sending these guys back down because they've played poorly. No, this is full-on cap management. We've seen Vancouver do this all year. Other teams have done this all year. And I checked in on this. This is... The Flames don't practice on Wednesday, and so with the Flames not practicing, they would be wasting a day of both Walker Duehr and Jacob Pelche's waiver exemption clock. So what happens is when you clear waivers the first time, you get 30 days or 10 games on an NHL roster before you have to clear waivers again. And by extending that clock as long as you can, you just give yourself more flexibility. So by sending them down to the American League, it means that on this Wednesday, it won't count as to one of their days on the NHL roster per the waiver exemption rule. That's all that's happening. Expect to see them back for Thursday's game against Tampa Bay. That was an effective, more than effective fourth line against Nashville. So that's what's going on right now. And the reason why they haven't done it other times is because they were practicing that day, or they weren't off days.
Or they were on the road.
Or they were on the road.
Because technically you have to physically send them back when you demote. You're not going to do that on the road.
The NHL does like that. Like, they don't like the paper moves. Well, when you're at home, they're not going to necessarily go and check your odometers, right? So this is for that reason. Plus, if they were practicing on Wednesday today, different story, because they'd still have to be up with the team to practice, but they didn't even practice. You could send them down, bring them back up. They'll be back at morning skate on Thursday. That's the expectation. So when I checked in, that's what's going on. It extends the waiver exemption clock, and for a day, they accrue a little more cap space. Now, they're going to have like $650 million of cap space when they get to the trade deadline, when all the accruals kick in, or when all the accruals are finalized. But still, little more cap accrual and not wasting a day of their waiver exemption clock. That's what's going on. Pelche and Duer have both been really good in their four games. This is just a flexibility move. So just wanted to clarify that, because I saw the reaction immediately, checked in with a few people. I'm like, this is what's happening, right? It's like, yeah, that's what's going on. So, because there's like, what are you doing? These guys have been, and I know, like, that. I get it. That's everybody reacts to it. So I just wanted to give a little clarity on that front as well. Okay, coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour, Steinberg Vickers on a Wednesday. Groundworks is your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Country Hills, Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg and Vickers, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, as well. Gentlemen, why Braden Pahal scores a gorgeous one on Tuesday. Credit to him. Bar down as he walked in and roofed it to tie it 3-3 in the second period of that win over Nashville. Guys, if you take a look at this Flames defense, there have been a few guys who have played every game. Rasmus Anderson, Mackenzie Weegar, Kevin Ball, and Braden Pahal. The others, Daniil Miramanov, Jake Bean, Tyson Berry, Joel Hanley, have all sat for at least one game. Guys, why do we think Braden Pahal is the one-third pairing guy who has not come out of the lineup? What has Braden Pahal done to kind of solidify himself as a non-negotiable every-night guy on this Flames blue line?
Well, first of all, it was really good to see a guy who's been so consistent in his role this season get rewarded offensively for the first time in quite some time last night. His first goal of the season, his first point since the season opener, and it's always good to see guys who aren't expected to produce offensively chip in. Gives them a shot in the arm, and Braden Pahal deserves it. In my opinion, the reason why he has been a mainstay on the right side of that third pairing is because he consistently plays to his identity. And I think he brings something that the Flames would like to have more of, and that's physicality. That's a part of the identity that they'd like to have as a hockey team, and certainly of the guys in the back end. And there are guys that play with some edge, like Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar, and even Joel Hanley when he's in the lineup. But, you know, Braden Pahal, I would say, brings more physicality than anybody else as far as the defensemen on the Flames are concerned. And he's solid defensively. You know what you can expect from him. And I think he's just been really solid and consistent in his role. And there's been really no reason for the coaches to take him out. And I think that's what you want from a third pairing guy. You don't want an excuse to take him out of the lineup. And with the exception of one or maybe two games this season, I think he's been steady Eddie back there. And why would the coaches take him out?
Yeah, this might be parroting or echoing a lot of what Willsey said, but Pahal has a sort of unique skill set when it comes to the eight defensemen you have on the roster with his stay-at-home brand. And the most important thing that I find with Pahal is, again, he knows who he is. He knows what he has to do in order to stay in the lineup night in, night out. There's no delusion from Braden Pahal in terms of what his ability is, what his skill set is, what he should be doing when he has the puck, what he should be doing when he doesn't have the puck. And again, to lean back, he's got a bit of snarl, and there are only two or three guys on the Flames that I would expect to mix it up to expect to drop the gloves, and Pahal's sort of one of them. And that aggression shines through in the simple fact that he leads all Flames defensemen in hits per 60 minutes at 9.78. So that's almost 10 hits per 60 minutes. Number two, Mackenzie Weegar on that list at 6.68. So yeah, Pahal's not going to command the ice time that a Weegar does, but he's certainly playing a physical brand when he does hop over the boards. Sort of steady Eddie or dependable, is not going to play outside of his own skill set. And he's stayed to that identity, stayed true to that identity through 29 games. And for me, that's what's kept him in the lineup, that brand of dependable, stay at home, physicality, defend your teammates. He's been set and forget for Ryan Huska.
Yeah, and I mean, I go back, guys, to something that he told Wes and I after the first preseason game. Remember that first preseason game where he lit up the Kraken preseason squad for like 8 hits or whatever it was, and the Flames came out kind of, they win that game in Seattle, and they were very physical from start to finish on that night. And so the next day, which was a split squad game, Pahal wasn't playing, so he joined Wes and I in the hot stove for a sit down after practice. And as we were talking about, I just asked him, I was like, hey, I mean, you know, we know the things that you bring to the game, but you know, do you think there's some more offense in your game? Is that something you want to develop? And he kind of just honestly said, not really. Like, I know who I am. And there's nothing wrong with being a third pairing right shot defenseman in the NHL. And that's not a bad job to have. I want to be the best third pair D I can possibly be. And I just thought that was such a refreshing way of putting it. It's like, yeah, that guy knows who he, like, you know what? He's one of the best 800 hockey players on the planet. We know that, or less, and he is one of the top 0.01% hockey players anywhere there is. But in the NHL, compared to the other guys, he's like, no, I'm not Cale Makar. I'm not Rasmus Anderson. So I'm going to play to who I am. And so that, I think, is a really important realization that he does play to who he is. That would be one. He adds a penalty killing edge to it, which I think is important. And his ability to kill penalties is a big part of what he does. And I think that him continuing to be really just take pride in that has been important. And then, yeah, to echo what you guys have said, there's not really anybody who plays physical as much as he does. And there's not really anybody who kind of embraces that side of the game quite the same way. So I've been impressed. And guys, I didn't necessarily see it coming. I was not as big a believer in Pahal coming out of last year. I thought that he spent too much time chasing in his own zone. I thought he spent too much time on the back foot. And I didn't see a ton of effectiveness from him last year. But Ryan Huska has been a big believer in him since he got here. And that belief is really shining through now. I give him a lot of credit. He's taken some big steps this year in terms of the consistency of his game, too.
Yeah, and I mean, prior to the start of the season, if there was one of the Flames' bottom-pairing defensemen, the four guys who have played in that role that I would have penned in, it would have been Jake Bean. And when I say that, I might have actually penciled him into a top four spot. And it's been good to see, you know, the Calgary kid kind of establish himself. What has he played in 4 or 5 straight games now? But he's been in and out. And I think another reason why Braden Pahal has been the mainstay on the right side of the Flames' third pairing is because two of the three guys who have rotated in on the left side of that pairing, and Tyson Barrie and Jake Bean, I would consider them to be certainly Barrie, maybe less so Bean, but more offensive defensemen. So I think you want to pair an offensive defenseman with a defensive defenseman who's going to stay home and let that guy get more involved in the rush and more involved offensively. You know, Barrie certainly is an offense first defenseman. Bean, I would say, is more of a 200-foot defenseman because he's got those really good gaps, but he can certainly skate the puck up the ice and get involved offensively. And we've seen a lot from him since he's been back in the lineup. Joel Hanley's more in the Braden Pahal mode, where he's more of a defensive defenseman. So, yeah, you've got, a defensive guy back there that you can certainly feel comfortable pairing with any of the other three guys. And I give Braden Pahal a lot of credit. I think there's something to be said about knowing who you are and not trying to be someone else. And let's be honest, if you're a kid growing up playing the game, you probably want to be the next Cale Makar as opposed to the next Braden Pahal. But I think that because of that, there's a lack of guys who are just kind of focused on being good defensively and being imposing physically that are playing the game these days. So those guys are becoming more and more rare. but I still think they're very valuable.
Yeah, and Wills, you kind of touched on this. I just want to circle back on it, too. It is important to note that part of the reason, from my perspective, Pahal has played in all 29 games is the skill sets that do exist in that bottom four. And you mentioned it being Hanley, Barry being the other ones. There isn't a pure sort of shutdown physical guy the same way Braden Pahal is, where if he was competing with somebody that was also a right shot that also had some snarl, or even a left shot, if they're like Dennis Gilbert, for example, were still around, I think you might be able to see a bit of a switch up every now and then. But the fact that the other three defensemen aren't quite the same brand as Pahal, I think aids him as well.
Okay, let's continue along on our Daily Flames Roundtable. Vix and Derek Wills. My name is Pat Steinberg. Guys, what do we make of the Tampa Bay Lightning this season after two straight years without winning a playoff round? They went to the Stanley Cup Final a couple of years ago, lost in six games to Colorado. Since that point, have gone to the playoffs in the 2 years since, but haven't been able to win a playoff round. Where does Tampa sit for you on your NHL tier list?
Still very dangerous because they have a player at every position who I would consider to be one of the best in the world. So you've got Andrei Vasilevskiy in goal. You've got, probably multiple players up front. You've got Victor Hedman on defense. And then you've got Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point at forward. And these guys are amongst the best in the business at what they do. So when you have high-end players like that, I think you are a very dangerous hockey team. But when you win back-to-back Stanley Cups and when you go to three Stanley Cup finals, as they have done in recent years, your players become more valuable and you can't keep everybody. And they just, for me, aren't as deep as they were when they won in 2020 and then again in 2021 or even in 2022. And you can't convince me that in a perfect world, they wouldn't have kept a bunch of guys that they had to let go, including Blake Coleman, who won two Stanley Cups with them. He was such a good third-line depth player for them, and certainly Steven Stamkos, who we saw wearing a Predators jersey, and that still looks weird to me, and I'm sure it feels weird to him. But, in a perfect world, you keep arguably the best player in the history of your franchise because he can still play the game at a pretty high level, but you just, because of the salary cap, can't afford to keep everybody. So now the Lightning, I don't think they're anywhere close to being as deep as they once were, but I also think they've done a pretty good job considering that they haven't had a lot of high picks, drafting and developing, kind of keeping their AHL team stocked up so that when they have to let some go of some established NHLer, they've got guys who are ready to step in and fill that role, even if it's not to the same level, at least right away. But I just don't think they have the depth that they once did. So I wouldn't consider them to be, top three or five as far as Stanley Cup contenders for me, but still a team I wouldn't want to play in the playoffs because Vasilevskiy can steal games and can steal series. And then you've got, as I mentioned, Kucherov and Point up front and Hedman on the back end who can take games over. So a team I would want to avoid, but again, because they don't have the depth they once did, maybe a team that would have trouble getting through four rounds unscathed.
Yeah, I'm like you, Wilsey. I wouldn't necessarily call Tampa Bay a top three or a top five team, but they would be firmly in my top 10. And as it stands now, they've got 6 point per game players. They've got one of the best goalies in the NHL. They've got one of the best defensemen in the NHL, top five player in Kucherov, a top 10 player in Point. But again, let's not forget they have an elite coach as well in John Cooper, who has had a little bit of success in this league, and general manager as well. I do have questions about the depth in their bottom six forwards and their bottom four defensemen night in, night out, but the sheer fact that they have absolute elite talent on their roster leads me to believe that, that depth isn't there, but they can overcome that with some high-end skill, great goaltending, and one of, if not the best coach in the league.
I mean, I give this team a ton of credit because they ran into what the championship teams run into in a salary cap world. It's kind of the championship curse where now all of a sudden guys are getting paid, and that in a salary cap world is going to mean that you make some sacrifices. But I give him a lot of, like, Julien Brisebois and the job that he's done in backfilling has been really impressive. And some of the players they've identified to fill the NHL minimum roles have worked really nicely. I mean, Connor Geeky's been a nice fit there. Ryan McDonough has been a revelation back there on their blue line. And just like there's just a few. J.J. Moser's been a really nice fit for them.
Hagel's the best example from my perspective. He's got 31 points this
year. See, Hagel's a little bit different for me.
Not in a bottom backfield.
They gave up like 3 first-round picks for him. So that's a little bit different for me. But
okay, fair.
But I get what you're saying. Like to your point, they've identified guys that are a little bit less expensive and guys that they can maybe get on better value deals, and they've been able. So I think Hagel's a good example too, because they've been able to bring them in and just kind of implement them in their lineup, and they've been able to work. And Hagel's on Team Canada because of what he's been able to do under John Cooper. And Jake Guentzel was a really nice identification by the Lightning. I look at what they've done, and yeah, they've had to pay Kucherov, they've had to pay Vasilevsky and Hedman, and they had to say goodbye to Stamkos. But the guys that they have, Nick Paul's another really good example of a guy that they paid a lot for, but they felt like he was going to fit exactly what they need in terms of the system they play. So, you know, they're not as deep as they've been, and that is a part of being an extremely successful team. Now, a lot of successful teams don't win the way Tampa has. At least they're paying the price for their depth, and they've got banners. Lots of other teams have to do that and don't have the banners, but they also have done a really nice job. I think as good a job as you could possibly ask for in terms of backfilling. So no, they're not the same powerhouse they were, but they're still a really good team. And with that type of Kucherov, Point, Hedman, Vasilevsky, that type of talent, even when you're talking about how good Anthony Cirelli has been for them, and on his way to Team Canada as well. That's a really good hockey team that they've been able to maintain even with the salary cap challenges they've had.
Yeah, and they've had probably more of them than anybody else because of the success they've had and because of the number of star players that they've had in the fold. And listen, I'm probably at least a little bit biased. I worked with Julien Brisebois for a number of years when I was with the Hamilton Bulldogs. He was one of the assistant general managers of the Montreal Canadiens, and he ran their AHL team. And I personally think the guy is a genius. So I was not surprised to see him take over for Steve Yzerman. Kind of looked like that was the succession plan that the Lightning had. And it's worked out really well. Back-to-back Stanley Cups, 3 Stanley Cup finals, and still a team that I think could win if everything fell into place this season. And I don't expect them to be quiet between now and the NHL trade deadline. I know they lost their captain Stamkos, but they understand they're still in a window to win. And I think they've got enough assets that they can go out there and add a piece or two if they want to. But again, a Lightning team that I would not want to face because of the high-end talent that they have and because of the culture that they've created. And that does give them an advantage, guys. They've got great ownership there. They play in a market where players want to be, whether it be the no state tax, whether it be the climate in Tampa. And they have an organization that players want to play for because of the great reputation they have. So that definitely gives them some advantages, yeah. But I would say that they've earned those advantages. So I think the Lightning are as good an organization as you'll find in the NHL. And still a threat to win the Stanley Cup this season, in my opinion.
Lightning are in town Thursday night to help the Flames kick off a 5-game homestand. That's Thursday. For now, we wrap up our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday. Thank you, Wilsey. We will see you Thursday morning at the Dome.
All right, guys. See you tomorrow.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable this hour. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.